UCL Library Services Special Collections. Podcast 4. Treasures from the Science and Medicine Collections. Composite Photograph of Criminals by Francis Galton.
I'm Steve Jones. I'm Professor of Genetics at UCL, and I'm head of what's just become the Department of Genetics, Evolution and Environment. Well, what we've got here is a classic of one of Galton's brilliant, albeit flawed, ideas, and typically for Galton, at least a century ahead of its time. Galton was obsessed with human quality, and he wrote a book which is sometimes described rather generously as the founding work of human genetics, which was called Hereditary Genius, and that was published in 1869. And in fact, he left a large fortune to UCL to study genius, hereditary genius, eugenics as it was called, and the college is very marked by that history. Now, Galton was convinced that people of genius, including of course himself, were having fewer children than people lacking in genius. And he was strongly of the opinion that we should try and establish who was clever and who wasn't, give extra money and cash to those who were, and discourage those who were not from having children. And here we've got a classic of his work. He was very concerned about the inheritance of criminality, and nobody denies that criminality runs in families. Nowadays, the strongest predictor of your going to prison is if your father's been to prison. And that doesn't prove it's genetic, but that's a separate issue. So what he did was to take a number of photographs of criminals and to meld them together on a single plate to try and get a composite of a typical criminal face. And he hoped that perhaps he could spot criminals and maybe even preemptively put them in jail. Now that may seem like an eccentric idea, but actually it's been picked up today. There are people who do facial scanning and claim to be able to test that somebody's about to explode a bomb, let's say, or somebody has a personality which makes them aggressive. I saw something in the paper this very day about that. Now, whether that's true or not, and I rather doubt it, it descends directly from Galton, as do so many other modern pieces of scientific work. I think what's interesting about this material is that it's, to use, I think, the right word, it is inspirational. Particularly the case of Galton, actually, I think it's useful for students of molecular genetics because there are so many promises which are made by that field today in terms of interpreting people's personality, in terms of telling you how fertile they're going to be, what they're going to die of, and all this kind of stuff. This is straight from Galton. And the claims, many of them, are just as feeble as those made by Galton, but they're made in more technical language.
On the Motion of the Blood by William Harvey.
I'm Paul Ayres. I'm Director of Library Services here at UCL, and so ultimately I'm responsible for the upkeep of special collections here in the library. This little book, William Harvey's On the Motion of the Blood, is known probably as the most important book in the history of medicine. It was published in 1628, and in it, Harvey describes his discoveries on how the blood circulates around the body, driven by the heart as a pump. That was absolutely earth-shattering in its time. Other scholars had thought this might be the case, but Harvey proved it beyond all reasonable doubt. And he wrote up his discoveries here in this book. He is the first person seriously to think of the heart not as the medieval thinker did, as the source of emotion and pain, but as simply a mechanical pump that drove the body. And in this book, he was able to show that blood moves round veins and arteries in the body. And so this discovery enables the later explorations in medicine, which led to the birth of surgery and anatomy as we know them today. The book's written in Latin because all scholars in the 16th century would read Latin, and if you wanted your book to be read outside your own country, well, then you had to use an international language. Latin was the international language of scholarship, and so he wrote in Latin for an international audience. He had trained in Italy, in Padua, as a young man, and so for him, writing in Latin would have been a perfectly sensible thing to do. people who would use this book fall into several categories. The serious researcher who wanted to get close to the source of their research would, as an act of homage, come and read Harvey in an original edition in the original language. But for students and for young people in schools who were studying biology, who wanted to know more about public health, about infection, they could interact with this book in a completely new way, in the way in which we would take it to a school, we would take it to an undergraduate lecture. They could look at the pages, they could turn the pages, they could see the original illustrations. The experience of touching this book, of interacting with this book, brings alive in a very real way, which a formal lecture does not do on its own, what the importance was, the excitement that Harvey felt in writing this book, in describing his discoveries, and inspiring new people in later generations to share that excitement and to share that sense of adventure and to follow on where he left off in terms of taking the subject forward, both in their own studies and in their own research. So it's a real inspiration in a way. And one of the things we want to do in Special Collections here in UCL is to rethink what the experience of interacting with an object is, so that it is not a two-way passive interaction between you and the text, but it then inspires you to go on to do new work or to think of things in a different way. And if we can do that, then we've invented a new role for Special Collections in teaching and learning. And this is something we take very seriously here in the university.